Hello, everyone. I'm Brian Carrington, and you're listening to Call Talk for August 13th, 2014. And today we're going to talk about employee recognition. And I want to remind you, if you're listening live, we want to invite you to go and ask questions. And here's how you do it. It's real easy. Number one, and probably the most common way, is to just go ahead and email me at brian@benchmarkportal.com. And that's spelled out brian@benchmarkportal.com. Or you can go ahead and call as well. Just dial 347-857-3117. And then just press the one on your phone to know you have a question and that you want to actually get on to the show. Again, that number real quick. 347-857-3117. I also want to remind everyone that all of our shows are archived and available to listen to at any time that's convenient for you at our website at benchmarkportal.com. Just go to our website, find Call Talk and the archives, and away you go. Got a lot of great information and shows there for you. So, speaking of shows, let's kick this one off, and it's my pleasure to introduce the host of Call Talk, Mr. Bruce Belfiore.
Well, thank you, Brian, and welcome back to Call Talk, everyone. Today's topic is employee recognition, and it's a very important subject. We did some research about a year ago on agent satisfaction, and we looked at over 5,000 surveys, which came together in a report that we called Agent Voices. And one of the things that we found was that recognition is a pain point for call center agents. It scored near the bottom of all categories. So it's one that we as managers really need to look at and to work on a bit harder. So we've brought in an expert on the topic for you, Mr. Zane Saffrett. And Zane spent his career in call center operations, starting at an entry-level position, and he's worked his way all the way up to CEO. Much of his career was spent serving international customers and sales forces, so he's had the extra challenge of trying to motivate people in different cultural contexts. And he's seen that the language of employee recognition and engagement is really a universal language, works pretty much the same around the world, and so are the forms of its return on investment, its ROI. As a country manager, he opened his company's first overseas office in Germany and used employee recognition and engagement to double sales and triple the number of new orders within the first 6 months. And so this was really a great accomplishment. He wrote a book called Recognize Them, 52 Ways to Recognize Your Employees in Ways They Value. And in this, he's compiled many of the methods he used to recognize and engage his employees. And a lot of these don't require financial outlay. So this is really important to understand for those of us who are resource constrained as a result of budgetary concerns. He also shares research and data to show the positive impact on a company's performance, and he provides inspiring quotes from business leaders on the value of employee recognition. Another thing that he does is to share his mistakes to help readers avoid them as they begin journeys toward a culture of engagement. So with that introduction, it's my real pleasure to welcome Mr. Zane Saffrett. Zane?
Hey, guys. Thanks so much for having me on the show.
Okay, well, great. Well, Zane, let's talk about this term employee engagement. Start off with what is it and what should it mean for a company?
Well, my first encounter with the term was when I read a book called The Corporate Lattice by Kathleen Binko and Molly Anderson. And I interviewed Molly on my own radio show, and what got me excited about the term was the positive ROI for companies with high levels of engagement among their employees. I mean, I like the feel-good aspects of employee engagement as much as anybody, but where it drives it home and makes it real is the positive financial returns creating a culture of engagement. She reported that companies saw significant, eye-popping improvements in all measures of their performance, revenue profit growth, operating efficiency, customer employee loyalty, sales conversion, equity valuation. And from my own experience, we achieved a lot of these financial results ourselves through employee recognition and creating engaged and enthusiastic employees. There's a hundred different definitions, and most of them tend to be rather dry and academic. But the way I define it, and I think the way most people would, is employee engagement is when an employee's emotions and intellect are involved in their work. They're being proactive, finding and executing solutions and communicating and collaborating and creating sustainable work days and culture with their colleagues. It's when Monday arrives, and sure, it's Monday and it's work, but you're ready to jump into the fray knowing got the resources, you need to do your work, you're recognized regularly by your boss and peers, you work with those you consider among your best friends, you have a chance to grow and learn. And I've worked in two companies with high levels of engagement, and the days are busy, fun, sometimes a little crazy. There's lots of laughter and lots of head scratching, you know, as you're racing to deliver, you know, the results and the solutions for all the growth that you're achieving. And it's a very descriptive term, even if a bit bizarre for most folks. It definitely has a ring of an academic origin.
Yeah.
But everyone understands it, at least on an emotional, intuitive level. And we understand how it's used and what it describes, which in too many cases is not their own work environment.
Right, right. No, that's right. And it's something that's really a shame because it does produce two things that managers really want to see. First of all, it produces results in terms of improved metrics and performance indices that they can actually show to their higher-ups. And second, it's a lot more pleasant to work in these places, isn't it? I mean, it's just much more fun. And you're not dealing as a manager and wasting time with all of the problems that oftentimes come along with situations where people don't feel properly recognized. And, you know, one of the things that strikes me here, Zane, is that you really have and from the book as well, sort of an A to Z look at this. In other words, you're looking at it from the point of view of engagement and the human side of things, but then also the revenue, profit growth, and even equity valuation part of things. So we're moving from ROI to even EPS, right, type of indices.
That's right.
And,
that's right.
And for our listeners, and, you know, we've seen this over and over again, it's sometimes hard to make that jump because there's a left brain, right brain thing that goes on in our industry because we're basically people, right, in the industry. And yet we have to report to people and corporations that are very much looking at the numbers. And one of the tough love messages that we repeat over and over again is you have to learn how to translate your metrics, and both in terms of the people side and in terms of the call center side, first call resolution. Okay, if you improve your first call resolution, for example, by motivating people properly, recognizing them properly, you will actually reduce your costs. And those costs, that reduction can actually be figured into an ROI if you, in fact, had to pay anything for it, and even into an earnings per share calculation. And we won't go through that, how to do that on this call, but it's one of the things that I hope people who are listening will sort of tune into. And if they need help, you know, we're happy to help them to do that. But very, very important. I'm sure that you've had some experiences where you've had very satisfying results where not only have you pumped up a center, but you've also been able to do a really, you know, wonderful quarterly or annual report to senior management and show some great results for it.
You know, I have, and it's interesting what that challenge you described, you know, the gap between, you know, connecting the human side with the, I don't know, harder, you know, numbers, financial metrics, and quarterly report side. And once I began to connect those two, because in my mind it was so obvious, you know, especially in a small group of, you know, 8 or 10 people, it was so obvious the connection between, you know, what that said, you know, that call resolution and the reward that you wanted, which it was a sale or a conversion or, you know, customer retention. But, you know, people are in the trenches and they get busy and they don't connect what they're doing to the result. And that's because I wasn't recognizing what they were doing in a way that connected with their motivators, and also what connected to the higher purpose, which is, you know, creating an engaged culture with their teammates, generating the results for themselves, for the incentives we structured for them, and then also connecting their efforts with the overall results of the company. So, anyway, it's the connections are there. It's just we really have to take the time to spell them out in detail and do it on a regular basis.
Right, right. That's it. And it's going to be different for every center, but there are going to be certain approaches that are going to lead everybody in the same way. And so that's what really you talk about in the book and what we're talking about now. So, well, you know, this is a very trendy topic today. We get a lot of questions about it from clients as well. So, you know, why are so many people talking about employee engagement now?
Well, another way to think about it was, you know, it's about time. Because according to the Gallup organization and our own experience, 70% of employees in America are considered disengaged from their work. And so if you're in a call center and you're listening, stand up. Let's say you're in a cubicle environment. Stand up and look around and realize 7 out of 10 of the cubicles there are occupied by people, good people, motivated, smart, dedicated, honest, wonderful coworkers. But they're merely going through the motions.
That's depressing to think about, isn't it? Yeah.
It's, and I think some people don't want to think about it. And when you think about what it costs the economy, that's $400 billion a year. And I don't even know if that figure includes all the jobs not created from all the ideas and solutions either not shared or not heard by the managers. And the mindset and management theory that held employees as, you know, cogs in a machine, you know, back at the turn of the last century, the Industrial Revolution, you know, it's no longer delivering the results. There's one statistic that just jumps out at me. Since 1964, publicly traded companies have seen a negative return on assets. If people want, I'm happy to share that link with them. And regardless of their ability to honor this truth, employees are every company's greatest asset. So what you're seeing is, since 1964, traditional management methods have generated a negative return on their most important asset, which is employees. And that's the source of why we're getting 70% who, you know, they care enough about their job to do it, to keep it, but nothing more. And think what opportunities and solutions are lost.
Okay. So really, the problem you've stated, I think it's very clear, and I'm sure that many of our listeners are sort of feeling the pain themselves, or already feel the pain, but are identifying with the pain. So in reading the book, though, you're adding something different to the conversation. So tell us about your perspective on employee engagement as you shared in your book, and then let's actually get into some of the recommendations so that our listeners can come away with something they can use.
Excellent. First off, let me clarify, you know, I'm not a professor of organizational development. I'm not a theorist. I don't write white papers. I'm not presenting myself as a subject matter expert or a guru. You know, I write as one person who has come up through the ranks, sat in the chairs in a call center at an entry-level frontline position, and worked my way up and experienced what it meant when I had a manager that recognized me, that gave me the tools and resources to do what I wanted to do in order to meet the goals and to work in a group of people all aligned with finding the best solution each and every day. And, you know, I started my days, you know, 100 times with every call going, "My name is Zane, how can I help you?" And I bring that perspective here to managers and CEOs. My name is Zane. I sat in your chair. I sat in the chair of the people you're trying to motivate and lead and engage with. how can I help you? Here's some ways I found that have helped me, and I'm pretty sure they're going to help you. And, you know, in all these positions coming up through the ranks, I saw what's possible when you recognize employees with the tools to do their job, give them the right to participate in decisions and creating solutions, work with friends, mm-hmm. and make recognition a daily event, even an hourly event. And when you look at failures and mistakes as not showstoppers or things to be horrified by, but as learning lessons and opportunities to bond together and grow together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, so what's interesting there, too, is one of the top categories that we saw in this Agent Voices study was that people do value very much the atmosphere that they have in most call centers. So the family atmosphere is something that's very much appreciated. And that's at sort of the peer level. And it's when you need recognition from somebody above that it's not coming. So those people listening to this call tend to be managers, supervisors, et cetera. So, you know, take it, do a little bit of examination of a conscience and see what it is you might do. Actually, let's do that now, Zane, if that's okay. Skip over to some of the things that are your favorite things to actually do as a call center manager or supervisor that are recognition. So put some meat on the bones for our listeners here.
Absolutely. You know, the things I recommend are the simplest and most affordable, which is you speak to your people every day. Take a minute and go by and stop what you're doing. Leave your smartphone at your desk or mute it if you have to carry it around with you. And go and take a minute to talk to them, make eye contact, and listen to them. You know, I grew up in the South. We talked about it before the show. And, you know, it was common for people just to always say, hey, how are you? How's your family? How's your aunt, you know, so-and-so? It's the same thing here. You can drop the Southern accent, but you can go to them and say, hey, Bruce, how's it going? And be quiet and listen. A friend of mine who runs a company called Results.com, he has a more structured approach, which is 2 minutes and two questions, which is spend two more minutes with each person every day and ask two questions. And the next step that he didn't articulate is then you have to be quiet and listen. And over unlike what I'm doing. And then you have a chance to develop respect, develop a relationship, begin to understand that person, begin to recognize what it is that's important to them. The next way is use their name. I've worked in companies where, you know, my manager, not only did they never stop by, but if they did, they never used my name. And I knew they had no clue who I was, nor did it matter to them. And right there was the seed of the disconnect that we all felt. The other way is when you're in a meeting and you're talking to them, you have to close all your devices. You have to mute your phone. You have to put it on do not disturb. You have to close your laptop. You have to turn off your cell phone and pay attention to them. Obviously, you have to follow through on your word. How much does that cost? Well, it must be very expensive given that seems to be a key issue with employees and their managers and not following through. But I think it starts with not listening and understanding the impact a manager can have on an employee's day and their performance with just the simple things of stopping by and listening. The other thing is, you know, we talked a little bit about metrics and the gap between being able to measure it. A lot of companies feel that employee engagement there are no hard metrics to measure its impact. And, you know, to that, I just say, if you can find a single metric in your company where an employee does not have an impact on it, then don't use that. On the other hand, tell me one metric where an employee's effort and engagement and commitment does not have an impact on them. So find that one metric that has that an employee has the most direct impact on. For us, it was conversion rates, retention, and testimonials and referrals. So by those, we knew right away whether everyone understood their job, everyone had the tools to do their job, and they were the right tools and the right purpose to bring about the results we wanted, which is what our customers wanted. My favorite tactic, we have an extra couple of minutes. It takes a minute to sort of spell it out. I called it the company snitch program. And you know how snitches can really ruin a company's culture. You know, whispers and innuendos and create division and conflict. Well, I read it somewhere, and I hope someday somebody will remind me who originally wrote it. But they talked about how snitching is just another form of word of mouth and engagement and means to seek validation and connection among those in your organization. And the issue isn't the snitching. The issue is what they're being given to talk about, just like with customers. Mm-hmm. You can either give them a great experience or you can give them something miserable. Either way, they're going to talk about it. So we had a great we had a great company, and I realized I was not seeing all the little things that people were doing to make us successful. So I asked them, please tell me when you see each other doing heroic actions to save a customer, you know, to keep our servers up, to get billing out, to collect payments, you know, to help each other. Let me know, because I want to recognize it. And if you want to keep it anonymous, that's great. I'll just tell you, know, use the old phrase of a little birdie told me. So the first time we went through this, I think I did most of the snitching. And it was good. It ended the meeting on a high, and everybody felt good. The next meeting is a month later, and I had one or two from the group, and I said, oh, I heard that, you know, our IT guy extraordinaire kept their servers up, and that meant all of you could, you know, sales could sell, customer service could serve the customers, billing could bill. Did a couple more, and everybody felt good. The third time around, now everybody wanted to jump in. And before long, it was, we went around the room, I think, two or three times with people remembering, oh, I remember this person. They did that, and this person did that, and this person did that. And the euphoria and excitement, you know, was immensely tangible and meaningful. And it lasted for 3 or 4 days after that with everybody, you know, high-fiving each other and clapping and remembering and talking about it. And, you know, you take the – you leverage the power of a manager's ability to recognize and give that to everyone in the organization. Now you've got a real culture of recognition.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the things that's interesting is how some of the things you're talking about actually seem at first blush to be counterintuitive. And I think that's where we talk about thinking outside the box, which is what you do. I mean, a lot of these things at the end of the day may seem like they're absolutely logical and totally clear. But in fact, they come out of sort of some out-of-the-box counterintuitive thinking. Think about this, for instance. The two questions, 2 minutes that you mentioned that some managers do. Some people may say, oh, gosh, that just sounds so mechanical, sounds so dry. But in fact, it's not. It's the structure that allows you in a very pressured atmosphere and a very busy day to carve out the space for that human interaction that you need in order to really get to know the person that you're in front of, that you're talking to. And
that's
two
exactly
questions,
right.
2 minutes. My guess is that you know, the question should take about 10 seconds, and listening should take the rest of the 50 seconds, right?
That's right. That's right. And You know, the nice part about that sort of mechanical nature of it is it frees you up to wonder, okay, what am I going to do today, or how should I do it? You've got a procedure. I'm going to ask two questions. And that's the springboard into the really interesting human aspects of it. And sure, it's 2 minutes, but I'm willing to bet as time goes on, those 2 minutes grow to 3 and 4 and 5, and you start circling back onto what's really on the mind of that employee, what's really bothering them, or they're wanting to do, or the ideas they have. And that's where you start getting engagement.
Now, of course, it goes to 3 or 4 or 5 minutes if you're from the South like you. If you're from New England like me, then you can get it done quicker. we're just quicker. There was the case of one of our clients that decided to move south, and they figured that they would save a lot of money. And it turns out, though, that the talk time increased so much that they didn't. But anyway.
So true.
And the second counterintuitive thing is the snitch program. Well, snitch sounds terrible. You know, it's like, what is it? You know, what we talked about when we were in grammar school or elementary school together. And yet it's a wonderful way to get people to talk well about each other and talk well about things that are done. In fact, at the end of the day, Zane, wouldn't you agree that it's also a way of learning and communicating best practices among the people of your group, right?
That's exactly it.
It's not only a pat on the back, it's also a sharing and a sort of spreading around of best practices so that other people can use those best practices as well.
You know, you're exactly right. I read a lot about employee engagement. I'm sure you do too. And you know, one of the principles is always reinforce best practices, reward best practices. Well, okay, I like it, but how do you do it? You know, in a way that's really not wooden and not mechanical. And when it starts coming from your peers, you know, recognition among your peers is one of the key attributes of a strengths-based culture. And to empower that and to reinforce it by your peers is much more powerful and much more satisfying than to have your boss come over and go, I would like to recognize you for that proper behavior you did regarding, you know, this situation. When it comes in their words and their spontaneity and their heartfelt expressions, that's when it starts to take hold. That's when it really, you know, grabs the people by the heart and mind and goes, this is how we want to be every day.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Well, good. We're getting toward the end of our time here, and I know that Brian has a question that one of our listeners wants to ask, so I'll turn it over to him. The one thing that I would add is when possible, if you can, write personal notes in your own handwriting.
Yeah.
That can be a great thing, too. And you know, I've heard of situations where supervisors will actually mail the note to the person at home. And what happens then is it gets opened there. It actually gets, in one way or another, shown to other members of the family and perhaps
That's
even
right.
put up on the refrigerator, you know, or the bulletin board or something like that. And all of a sudden, you've taken that recognition to the individual, and you've made it recognition to a whole family. And
That's
that can
so
be
great.
Important also. You know, when for instance, if let's say that person needs to be asked to make a sacrifice to, you know, then put in some extra hours or something like that, the family may be disadvantaged, but they'll at least know that it's being recognized and appreciated, and that can mean a lot.
Oh, huge. That's a great idea.
Yeah. So anyways, 53. That's number 53. Anyway. So, Brian, let me turn things over to you because I know you've got a question there, and then I'm afraid we're going to have to end this very interesting and a lot of fun session.
Yeah, okay, thanks, Bruce. And Zane, let me preface this by, we know you're from the South, or at least once were, so we're going to ask you to keep this short answer because it's a big question. Beverly, I think we all are appreciating the different ideas and concepts. Employee engagement and how to really do it. But Beverly is asking, can you share your thoughts of employee engagement in regards to the different generations that you'd find in the work environment?
I think employee recognition and employee engagement transcends generations just as it did cultures and economies. You know, I found that the same steps to recognize and engage employees worked here in the U.S. as it did in Germany and around the world. We had 40 offices eventually with the company I worked. And the same recognition and appreciation and giving the right tools at the right time and hiring the right people worked everywhere. And we might communicate in different words. We might have different slogans or phrases, but it's going to work across generations as well. And I'm not a big fan of carving out generations, millennials, X, Y, boomers. I think it's more important to talk about what they share, the commonalities among it. And, you know, that's human recognition, appreciation, and validation. So I hope that answered it.
I think that does. Now, that's nice that you kind of bring it down to the human element where, you know, people are people. And, you know, there's an intrinsic kind of value to us as a human being and not to get wrapped up in the different generations and clothes and everything. It kind of simplifies things, too. So I bet people will be happy to hear that, your take on it.
Good. Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, good. We've come to the bottom, a little past, in fact, the bottom of our hour here. But, Zane, this has really been a great session. Really appreciate your insights and the things that you're bringing, the things you've learned together in your book, and then sharing those insights with us here. So thank you very much for your time today and for your contributions.
Thank you, guys. I so appreciated, you know, being on your show. As I mentioned before, I wish you guys had been around back in the day when I was training people, when we had no real training programs and we were learning as we went. Would have made our day a lot smoother, I think. But now you're here, and I'm happy to help people get to know you because you're doing a great job. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Well, thanks again, and over to Brian.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Zane, for keeping that line. I appreciate it. Wrapped it up well.
Sure.
And
yeah.
All right. Well, I want to let everyone know that we have another talk coming up next month. It'll be September 17th. But once again, it's got a lot of great shows in there, all sorts of different topics, and that way you can even download them, listen to them on your way home or to work, whatever's convenient for you. Also, that you can sign up for our free and see how your center compares to others in the industry. That's a really good management tool to help you get a concept of where your center is performing well and where you might need some work. So from all of us here at Benchmark Portal, keep those headsets steady and your fingers ready. This is Brian Carrington signing out. Have a great day. Thanks again for listening. Bye-bye.